Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is the response of the day for the 18th of Shvat. Today we're going to see Rav Moshe Feinstein's view about when we do or don't believe a woman's claim that she had had an affair. Now, halachically, let's suppose we could establish that a woman had an affair, a Jewish woman who was married, had an affair with another Jew, with a Jewish man, so she would be required to leave her husband. She would not be able to stay married to her husband. She would not be able to marry the man with whom she had an affair. That's called, she's a surah la ba'al v'la bo'el. She is prohibited to marry both the husband, to stay married to the husband, and to marry the man with whom she had an affair. So now, in Rigrut Moshe, Evan Ezer Gimel Lamed, the third time he approaches Evan Ezer, issues responsum number 30, dated to the 18th of Shvat of Tufshin Lamed of 1970. Rav Moshe was asked about a woman who says that she had an affair with a non-Jew, a voluntary affair, meaning if it's against her will, so that ones is a claim, she can make that claim. So she says, no, she had a voluntary affair with a non-Jew. Question is, and the husband says he believes. The question is, what do we do about that halachically? And this is a question that came to Rav Moshe from Argentina. So the man writing to Rav Moshe, and clearly what we want is to let the couple stay together, I think is what we're searching for, because we don't like to break up marriages if we can avoid it. So the man writing to Rav Moshe Feinstein had said, you know, the Avnei Nezer in Chaf Chet says that when Rabbeinu Tam, now some background, Rabbeinu Tam remarkably held, for whatever reasons, that in halacha, having an affair with a non-Jew doesn't count. He felt that for these purposes, it doesn't count as an affair, and therefore, it seems like it doesn't count. He spoke about, Rabbeinu Tam explicitly spoke about, in terms of her being allowed to, let's say, that non-Jew converted or whatever, could she marry that non-Jew? You know, that part of it. But the Avnei Nezer held that he meant it also in terms of letting her stay with her husband, that her having had the affair with the non-Jew means that, since Rabbeinu Tam holds, doesn't count halakhically for those purposes as her having had the affair. It counts in a lot of ways, but not in terms of this halakh of Asur La Ba'al V'la Bo'el. She could stay with her husband, which was not like the Ritva, who felt that the Ritva felt that Rabbeinu Tam held that for her husband, for sure, she wasn't allowed to stay married. The only question was the other guy. So, Rav Moshe says, I don't think the Avnei Nezer is correct, because part of what established that, part of what the Avnei Nezer used to support his view was that there's a whole question that when you talk about the psukim, the question is, if a non-Jew, let's say a non-Jew has an affair with a Jewish woman, let's talk about how halacha would deal with that non-Jew's perspective. So the Avnei Nezer suggested that she doesn't count as eshet re'ehu, she doesn't count as his friend, his colleague, his fellow Jew's wife, because he's not his fellow Jew, and it's not even the ordinary prohibition of eshet amitecha, the prohibition of having relations with the wife of your colleague. So too, the Jew is not the non-Jew's colleague. So that all was supposed to say that the rules of adultery are different from Jews and non-Jews. Problem is, Moshe says, I don't understand the Avnei Nezer so much, because if you look in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, it says that a non-Jew who has relations with a Rayut Yisrael, with women who are prohibited to him by Torah law, in terms of Jewish Torah law, it says Nidon ben Yisrael, he would be judged by Jewish law in these things. And Rav Yochanan there says he would be liable, for example, if he had relations with a Na'ara HaMe'orasa. Na'ara HaMe'orasa is a very good case for us, because a Na'ara HaMe'orasa is a young girl, so that part of it today has much different ramifications and connotations than it did in the time of the Torah, so we won't get into that part of it. So let's, for whatever reason, assume that a girl between the age of 12 and 12 and a half is meaningfully ready for marriage. Today, we obviously wouldn't think such a thing, but this is true in halacha. She has erusin, which means she has the first stage of marriage, which today would be the ring ceremony, which declares her to be prohibited to all of the people in the world, but she's not yet married. The reason why that's an important middle category for us is because non-Jews don't have such a category in halacha. In halacha, there is such a thing as non-Jewish marriage. So if I said to you that I could show you a Gemara where the non-Jew is liable for committing adultery with a married woman, you might say, well, that's because marriage is a meaningful category to the non-Jew anyway. But Na'ara HaMe'orasa, you could have argued that it's not a meaningful category to the non-Jew, because there is no such thing as erusin in the halacha's view of how non-Jewish marriage works. There in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Rav Yochanan says, but if a non-Jew has relations with an Na'ara HaMe'orasa, he would get skila. He would get the death penalty. So that shows, says Rav Moshe, that Jewish kiddushin create a prohibition for a non-Jew as well. The only argument you can make about a non-Jew is, let's say, if you have a Jewish girl or woman who's unmarried, so there you could argue that there's no real prohibition for the non-Jew to have relations with her, because there's something about her that makes her prohibited to him. She has a prohibition, right? It's her problem. She's not allowed to. In private, it's a derabbanan, says Rav Moshe, which is an interesting thing to think about, that just having, and this is not to say that it's okay, but that the act of having relations with a non-Jewish man, which is with no intent to marry, in private, where nobody else would know about it, that's a derabbanan. It has an impact on her status in terms of being able to marry a kohen. So it's not like it's fine, but it's a derabbanan. Whereas if she does it in public, it's kanayin poginbo. That you then people, if it was in front of other Jews, ten other Jews, people could who were filled with righteous anger about this would theoretically have the right to put her to death. And if she marries them, that's a prohibition min ha-Torah. That is a lav min ha-Torah. So then, if you're going to hold that way, what are you going to do about Pinchas? Pinchas kills not only Zimri, the Jew, he kills Cosby. But we just said that Cosby shouldn't have been on the hook for anything because she didn't do anything wrong from halacha's perspective of her. So the answer is, says Rav Moshe, Mishum Shibali Yisrael Takala Al Yada. It's really not because she did something wrong. It's because she was the source of a downfall of a Jew. And we have in halacha a couple of examples where if somebody causes a Jew certain kinds of downfall, we can see them as implicated in that as well. That's where Rav Moshe Feinstein is understanding this whole issue. This is all a long way to get around to the question of whether an affair with a non-Jew counts for our halachic purposes or not in terms of her having to separate from her husband. There were those who held that it did. The Ritva clearly held that it did, even according to Rabbeinu Tam, who for certain issues, thinks that having relations with a non-Jew doesn't count for these halachic purposes. But the Ritva held that it counts in terms of her not being able to stay married to her husband. The Avnezer had claimed otherwise, and this is what Moshe is going about, trying to show that that's not true, that he disagrees with that, he thinks it's incorrect. So coming back to the Kiddushin case, the Aramas case, he thinks that Kiddushin has an impact. Kiddushin was where the husband betroths her, he puts the ring on her finger, says, you are now only separate, you're only allowed to have relations with me and nobody else. So that Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that creates a prohibition on the non-Jew as well, even though the non-Jew is not bound by halacha, but it creates a status on her. She has now been set aside. And since it has an impact on the Jews around her, it also has an impact on the non-Jews around her. And therefore, Moshe Feinstein thinks that for all that non-Jews aren't bound by halacha, if a non-Jew has an affair with a woman who's just had Kiddushin, that would count from the non-Jew's perspective, from our treatment of the non-Jew, as adultery as well. There is a bit of a complication here that Moshe Feinstein points out, that according to the Ramban, we have this halacha of kanayin poginbo. The halacha of kanayin poginbo is that when Jews have relations with non-Jews in public, people who are deeply offended by it, right? They are righteously angry about it, theoretically have the right. This, I'm not getting to questions of whether and when you have to follow the laws of the land in front of that you're living in. That's a whole complicated issue of there, and that would probably mean that she could or couldn't do it. That the Kanoim could or couldn't kill them, but the Ramban held that it doesn't apply to a woman at all. That a woman who's having relations with a non-Jew would not fall into this. So the halacha in the Mishnah was Haboel Aramit Kanoim Pogim. That if somebody has relations with a non-Jewish woman, Kanaim are allowed to kill them, but not the Ramban held, not the other way around. So to the Rambam, sounds like he thinks the prohibition of a woman having relations with a non-Jew is only d'oraita if it's derech chatnut, if it's in a way of marriage, not just the act of relations. The Avi Miluim, who's a much later authority, he held it's not true. He held that he was mechadish that a Jewish woman who has relations with a non-Jew, it's a Torah prohibition, even b'derech znut, even if it's not for marriage, and even if it's in private. The Miluim held that was a Torah prohibition, which Rav Moshe Feinstein is clearly not interested in the Rishonim doing, meaning that the Miluim would not have said, oh, all the Rishonim hold this way, but I hold completely different. I don't think that's what the Miluim says. I think the Miluim held that they were agreeing, but he held that way. In any case, he felt he had found this idea. So all of this comes back to saying that the question of whether had we known for a fact, had we been positive that she had an affair, had it been clear that she had an affair, but it was with a non-Jew, that is not nearly as clear that we can that we can ignore it. Rabbeinu Tam has a thing that says maybe we could ignore it because he's not Jewish. There's much reason to think that that's not true. And in terms of her being able to continue living with her husband, So the first step of the problem is whether or not if she had the affair, if we know she had had the affair with the non-Jew, would that require her to separate in there while the rabbi writing to her, while the man writing to Rav Moshe Feinstein thought maybe there was room to say that Rabbeinu Tam would have said no? The answer we think is yes, probably she would have to separate from her husband if we could verify that she had an affair. Now we get on to the, to my mind, much more controversial aspects of this tshuva from 1970. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, it seems to me that the halacha is, and this halacha in the Gemara, and it's halacha to think about, and this gets into, the question comes up often, but this is one good example of it. When do we assume that when the Gemara makes statements about the assumptions about people and how they work, when do those apply at all times, and when do we think that they might have changed over time? That becomes a very focal central focus here, because the Gemara says about women in general who claim to have an affair that we don't believe them. And the reason the Gemara gives for us not believing them is that Shema Eineha Natna Be'Acher, that we worry and think that she might have seen a man she prefers to this husband, not yet had an affair with him, because having an affair is a very serious thing. It's a capital crime, and Hashem punishes you and all these kinds of things. But as a way to be able to have relationships with him, to marry this other guy, she says she had an affair with somebody. She won't name that guy, because then the halacha won't allow her to marry that guy. She'll name some other guy. Said she had an affair with some guy. You can't punish that guy based on her testimony, because she's, you know, she's relevant to it. And all she wants is to get divorced. So Chachamim said, nope, that we don't believe her, because we think that that's what's going on for her, and she'll lie for that, and she'll lie for it, the halacha, the Gemara said, even though it's embarrassing to her. Right? How's it embarrassing to her? It's embarrassing to her in the sense that she's declaring herself an adulteress, and yet the Gemara thinks it doesn't matter, that she is so interested in, we have to worry that she's so interested in marrying this other guy, that she would lie in this way, even in this embarrassing way. So that's the halacha. Moshe Feinstein says, so if the husband says to us he believes her, and the reason he believes her is that there's no way she would admit to having had an affair if she hadn't really had an affair, Moshe Feinstein says, we don't believe the husband. The husband doesn't have the right to say that, because we have a Gemara. And the Gemara says that even back then, right, when women weren't generally, you know, so, the word he uses is katzufot, they weren't so quick to violate the Torah and to do terrible things, but the Gemara can imagine them saying that they had an affair because they want to marry somebody else, so there's no way we'd believe him over that Gemara. And that's a mouthful, but there are more mouthfuls to come. So let's go through all the mouthfuls, and then we can maybe pause and think about it. So therefore, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, since I actually got a little bit wrong. He says in the early generation, they wouldn't think a woman would have said such things, but later generations, even in the time of the Gemara is already, still, they would already said that women would make up this lie in that way, and therefore we can't let the husband think that he knows better than Chazal, and therefore the court, the Beit Din, has to say to him, you're wrong. You're not allowed to believe her because you think that she would never lie, because Chazal says she would lie in such a way. And the Rav Moshe Feinstein says, even if he's a Talmud Chacham, who knows that Chazal says such a thing, and he says, you know what, it doesn't matter. Chazal may have said that generally. It may have been right in 99% of the cases, but I know my wife, and she would never say she had an affair if she hadn't actually had an affair. Rav Moshe Feinstein says it doesn't matter. That it doesn't matter at all. Not only not at all in terms of believing her, even at all. Now in halacha, in general, there's a concept called shavya anafshe chaticha de isur. There are times in halacha where the halachic presumption is one way. Let's say that something's permitted. It could be food, it could be a woman, it could be lots of things. But the man, by things that he said, has made it clear that he understands it to be prohibited to him. And in many of those situations, we then don't allow this man to indulge in that food or to marry that woman, because he's made, so for example, if a man claims he married a certain woman, this is a case that comes to my mind, Moshe Feinstein doesn't have this, let's say a man claims that he married a certain woman, and she denies it, and there's no proof of it. So we don't force her, just the fact that he says he married her doesn't mean that she has to be married to him. She says she wasn't married to him. So the answer is, the Gemara says, though, that he has now made her a chaticha di surah. That means he can't be married to her. He thinks he's married to her. So he might have to, you know, from his perspective, maybe he has to divorce her or whatever. But her relatives that he's not allowed to ever marry, he can't marry either. So, for example, he would never be allowed to marry her sister while this woman is alive, because from his claim, this is the sister of his wife, and you're not allowed to marry your wife's sister. So that's called Shavya Nafshi Dechadik Risor. Or if he says something about a piece of food that makes it clear that he believes this food is ushered to him, even if it's not, even if it doesn't reach the halachic standards that we have to care about it, he might have to do it. So here too, if he's saying he believes her, then forget the halacha. Let's say the halacha is that the Gemara says we don't believe women in this situation, and therefore we don't halachically think he has to believe her. But once he's already told us he believes her, doesn't that, Rav Moshe Feinstein sort of raises the possibility, say to us, Shavya Anafshi Chaticha Di'isura. He's made her a Chaticha Di'isura. He's made her prohibited to him. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, no, that's only when he is saying that he knows better than us for some reason that something is prohibited. But when he's saying, no, I know the halacha is that it's mutter, but I'm deciding that it's prohibited. So meaning, when he says, for example, I know I married this woman, he's saying, I know something better than the halacha knows better. But when the halacha says, you're not supposed to believe this woman because we think that your wife is lying about the affair because maybe she wants to marry somebody else, and he's saying, I know that's halacha, but I still think she's usher. Ramosh says, Feinstein says, that doesn't count for anything. And that's considered irrelevant. And that's one of those cases where we say, butla da'ato etzel sharbede adam, the fact, etzel da'at chazal, in this case, the fact that he says that he believes her, when Chazal said he's not supposed to believe her, so that's like going up against Chazal, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, and that makes you into an apikoros, and that makes you into an apikoros in the traditional meaning of the word apikoros, is somebody who doesn't respect Chachamim enough, doesn't have enough respect for the sages of, for Chazal, for the rabbis of every generation, especially the rabbis of the Gemara, and therefore he's not allowed to make her, he's not able to make her into a Chaticha de'isur, mukhrakim lomar, we have to say that even though in general if he believes her about something, that would only be in a case, there's Rav Moshe Feinstein, and here's where he starts pushing. So to stop before he says what he's about to say, I just want to make clear, Rav Moshe Feinstein has assumed that when the Gemara says, we don't believe women who claim to have had an affair because we're worried, Shemin Enna Be'acher, so Rav Moshe Feinstein is assuming that's a blanket statement by Chazal, it applies to absolutely all women, right? Because if it didn't apply to all women, if the Gemara was saying it applies to 95% of women, then even if they meant it throughout history, then there should have been room for the husband to say, I understand that about 95% of women, but it's not true for my wife, and then for us to run. So Moshe Feinstein is taking this hard line that when the Gemara says we don't believe women in this situation, we don't believe them. The problem is that there are halachic sources. Moshe doesn't go to it late. There are halachic sources that talk about the husband believing her and that being a halachically relevant fact. So Moshe Feinstein says, based on what he said until now, this is, I don't know Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvot so much, but I've noticed it in the few tshuvot that I've seen of Rav Moshe Feinstein. This seems to be fairly typical of him. He builds a structure of ideas and a way of understanding something, and then when new evidence comes up, he doesn't make him re-question his earlier understanding. His earlier understanding he's very confident about. It's that it has to be fit into it, and therefore he'll build a picture that fits it all together. So here too, he says when we have halachic sources that talk about that he believes her, and therefore that is halachically relevant, it must be, Rav Moshe Feinstein says, that he saw something as well. He's not just believing her. He saw her acting in certain ways that led him to believe there might have been an affair. Because then you can say he has what's called raglayim ladavar. So halachically, if there are raglayim ladavar, halachically, if there are pieces of evidence that would lead us to think she was having an affair, that changes the calculus. So then, if she says, I had an affair, we no longer only think that she's just lying to try to get out of the marriage. We think it might be true because there's evidence on its side. And then if the husband says that he believes her, to that, because the Beit Din would also have a doubt about it, and then he's allowed, if he believes her, we believe her. But if he claims there were reglai on the davar, we don't know if those reglai on the davar. He claims that he saw things that would have led him to believe she was having an affair, but he has no evidence for it that we as a court have to think about. So then we as a court won't take it seriously. And therefore we'll say to him, no, as far as we know, she's lying to try to get out of the marriage, therefore you have to not believe her. But he's saying, not only did she say it, but I saw Reglai and Ladavar, I saw them, whatever it was, in physically compromising positions, and I saw it. So then, Amr Roger Feinstein says, that's where Hashavya Nafshe Chaticha Di'isura. That's when we can say that she's now prohibited to him by virtue of his understanding of the situation, because he has a halachically valid personal understanding of the situation, does not shape the court's understanding of the situation, but does create a prohibition for him. Problem is, there's a Tosfot in Nedarim on Daf Tzadi that says that if a husband says he believes his wife about the fact that she had an affair, there are those who today who hold that we punish him, we put him in nidui, we shun him, as it were. And the reason we shun him is that he's causing us to say that yes, his wife is prohibited to him. And the problem is that if his wife is prohibited to him, he'll want to divorce her, and she might not want to accept the divorce because she'll be stuck, you know, without a husband, she'll be kicked out of the marriage. That gets complicated, I understand, with our previous claim that no, she always wanted to get out of the marriage, but it all goes together in this situation. So he'd have to force her to accept a get. But what if she doesn't want it? So that violates Cherem Rabbein Gershom, trying to force her to... We don't any longer allow coercing a get on a woman, which creates actually today some complications, many fewer than men who refuse to give their wives get, but it creates some complications. So the Tosfot said, so we'll punish the guy for having put himself into a situation where he has to force her to take a get, even if she doesn't want one, because that's a violation of Cherem Rabbein Gershom, and we punish him for that. We shun him for having... So now, that's a strange thing, because if he says... If Rosh Feinstein just said the only case in that situation where that can come up is if he claims he has raglayim ladavar, he claims that he has seen activities that lead him to believe she's having an affair, in addition to her claiming she's had an affair, then what are we punishing him for? So Rosh Feinstein says, you know what, if we think about it a little more, it's not hard to understand why. So Rav Moshe claims, he has a Mishle Melech that says it, and we won't get into all the details of it, but he claims that it's that situation where we're punishing him, and he thinks the reason is we're punishing him because we don't believe him that he saw these things. He claims he saw these things, and we don't believe him that he saw these things. Why don't we believe that he saw these things? Because it's not evidence from our halakhic standard that a man who's a nogea, but who has a stake in the case, claims he saw some evidence. That doesn't ring up true for us. And if that's true, then we can say we're putting you in nidui because we think he didn't actually see it. We think he's lying because he wants Beit Din to help him divorce her. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has now just created, it seems to me, a new set of suspicions about the husband. That just like the Gemara says, we disbelieve the woman because she thinks she's trying to get out of the marriage, that he's saying there are times when we'll disbelieve the man because we think that he's trying to get us, fool us into forcing her to accept a get when she hasn't done anything wrong. So the Ramah doesn't mention that. So this is all about a Tosfot. The Ramah doesn't mention it. So la halacha, it doesn't seem to come into play. And Rav Moshe says he thinks the reason why the Ramah didn't mention it is because the Ramah, because he thinks it fits very nicely with his now construction of these sources, because the Ramah would not have accepted that we'll put somebody in nidui just because we suspect that he's lying. So that gets to the question of, apparently Rav Moshe is willing to say that we don't allow the husband to believe her because we suspect that she's trying to get out of the marriage, but is not willing to say that's true for the husband as well, that we'll put him in nidui. He says the Ramah doesn't go against that. So it all gets complicated because the question is of which things we do and don't believe, which things we're allowed to, we assume as absolute psychological fact across all generations becomes very relevant here, because Rav Moshe is starting from the starting point, the certainty that when Chazal said we suspect that women are trying to get out of marriages and therefore we don't believe them when they say they've had affairs, he's taking that as absolute halachic fact, applies to all cases, is an assumption we have to apply to all cases, even against the husband saying he believes her, even against the husband saying he saw something that would lead him to believe her. In all those situations, Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks it's still wrong of the husband to have put us into this position, and therefore that's why he tells us thinks we would punish him in that situation. Especially, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it would be one thing where we could put him in doubt. Rav Moshe is bothered by the idea that we would punish somebody who claims to have seen something. So he says, no, it could be, you're right. It could be that if he claims to have seen something, we'll put him in nidui on the condition that he really didn't see it. It will say, if you saw this, you're in nidui. I'm sorry, if you didn't see this, you're in nidui for lying about it, try to get us to force to get on her. But if you saw it, you're not in nidui. And then the man can decide for himself whether he has to act like a nidui or not. That would be a complicated thing. But another possibility is she says it to him, and then he comes to the court and he says, I totally believe her. That we would say, you're not allowed to. Or let's say one witness says to him, I saw them, you know, acting in ways that would strongly lead us to believe that they were having an affair. So Rav Moshe says, but you're not required to believe that one person. So even if you say, but this is a person who I generally believe because he generally tells me the truth, Rav Moshe says, that doesn't mean you have to believe him in this situation. Rav Moshe Feinstein goes so far as to say that even if the one witness who says this to him is somebody who this man believes about every single else, you know, it's his closest friend, and he would believe him better than two witnesses on anything that comes up. Rav Moshe Fine says, the husband didn't have to believe him here, because he invokes this Mishnah in Avot that says, don't believe yourself until the day of your death, meaning people change. So Rav Moshe is willing to go so far as to say that it would be preferable, as a halachic matter, it would be preferable for this husband to say, it must be that my friend went crazy, who never lies to me, who I trust like my brother, I trust completely and implicitly more than witnesses. Preferable to say, required to say, he must have been lying, rather than be able to halakhically say that his wife must be having an affair by virtue of this one person's testimony. And now he tries to bring a proof for that. He says, even though it's clear bisvara, barur bisvara, and this is something that I found to be very true of Moshe Feinstein, when he comes up with an idea, he's very comfortable with it, very confident that he's right, and he builds off of that. And he clearly had learned a great deal before he developed that confidence, but by 1970, he's very confident in his understanding of things, and now he says, but I can bring a proof for it as well. He points out there's a Pitkei Tshuva, who quotes a Tshuva Chemdat Shlomo, who says that when the Rama says we'll be menadeh somebody, we will put them in some kind of excommunication, we'll ban them to a certain extent for believing the one witness or the wife, that's only on the condition that he's believing him only for this particular halachic issue. But if he really does believe him, he's not just making it up for the purpose of so that he can divorce the wife. He really believes him, because then the Chemda Shlomo says, then the nidui doesn't take effect and the man can ignore the nidui. But Rav Moshe says, there's no proof of that. That's not what the Rama says. In other words, Rav Moshe is going to say, my proof is the Rama doesn't put that into the situation, and it makes more sense that the nidui is lehechleit, that it's just a nidui, that we just excommunicate this person for having accepted the unfounded testimony of this woman and this witness that she had an affair. And there's a Rabbi Akiva Eger who says something as well, who says those who say that we force him to stay married to her, the Rav Akiva Eger also says, because he doesn't have the right to believe, he doesn't have the halachic power to believe her. So that supports Rav Moshe Feinstein he just said. And then he notes a Ridva who says that all of this is only when she didn't give him any evidence or any reason to believe her. But if she had some kinds of proofs, right? And so the Ridva said, when he says, if she brings up some kinds of proofs, if that means he doesn't believe her. But if he really understands her and she knows that she tells the truth, the Ridva says that she's prohibited to him. So that's going to be another example where Moshe, you might have thought, oh, I have a Ridva that says clearly, if he believes her, she's prohibited to him. You might have thought, well, that seals it. So Moshe, again, is going to explain it away. He has great powers of explanation, great powers of putting things together and building a whole framework, but he can be very stubborn in his understanding. So he says it must be. Now, when he says it must be, we have to say, what he means is the Ridva is saying something that my world can't make sense, so I'm going to have to read it differently. That's a hard question to me always about these situations. When you build up sources, and sources seem to be saying things that your view of the world wouldn't allow for them to say, at what point do you say, maybe I need to rethink my view of the world? In this particular situation, Rav Moshe Feinstein is not doing that, so therefore he says it must be that there's two ways in which the woman can be prohibited to the husband. One is, he knows that she never lies. Not that he believes her about this situation, but he believes her that she always, always tells the truth. Therefore, she would be telling the truth here. And then second, that he has reglai on the davar, he has evidence. But then, he says the Ritva has a chiluk between where he believes her like two witnesses, meaning he completely believes her. Then there's nothing he can do about it, and therefore he wouldn't be put in nidui. But if he only believes her that in general, she tells the truth, so then the Ritva would agree that we put him in nidui. So therefore, coming to the halacha, ladina, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, you have to pass on like the Rambam and the Maharik, that it's only when she's believed him about every single thing, we can say, or the one witness who believed to him, like two, is completely believable to him, can we say that you don't put him in nidui? And other than that, you would put him in nidui. And therefore he says, I think like what I said before, that if the husband tells you he believes this wife because she said she had an affair and she wouldn't have said it if she hadn't really had an affair, that doesn't count as anything because we already have a halachic statement that women lie to not lie about having had an affair because they want to get out of a marriage. So that wouldn't count for anything. And then Rav Moshe Feinstein says, and he thinks that even in this situation, if he knows his wife never lies, that's not necessarily good enough for our situation because it could be that she gets so caught up in her desire to get out of this marriage and marry somebody else that she would even lie about this, even though she's a woman who never lies before, because the way desires affect us in different areas of life could be unexpected and therefore could lead her to do something that's completely uncharacteristic. And that's why you would generally need a raglayim ladavar. You would need some kind of other proof that she had an affair. So I'm going to stop here because we've run out of time. But I mean, and there's very little. That's fundamentally Rav Moshe Feinstein's perspective. He thinks that we can't don't believe this woman unless there's supporting evidence in all these various ways, and therefore the man has to stay married to her. So I think these are complicated issues in lots and lots of ways. I think there's all sorts of reasons that I could have imagined coming to different conclusions of Rav Moshe Feinstein, starting with that Gemara and even the whole halakhic history of taking these presumptions as being fully established for all times and for all women. Seems to be a very complicated thing to do, and the whole idea of we're mishamit the man because he can't force a divorce on her that you have in the Ramah, as Rav Moshe points out, so that's a whole different set of questions. That gets questions of what do we do when marriages break down, and how do we do that, and how do those, and how do we deal with those situations, and how do we deal with men? So these are complicated issues, but the idea that we would force men to stay together with women that we think they have plenty of reason to think their wives had an affair, I think these are all complicated questions. But that is how Rav Moshe Feinstein dealt with it in this tshuva from the 18th of Shvat of Tafshin Lamed of 1970. Have a great day.